Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Heard the motion to sign and die. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, we'll go to the board. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, record the vote.
Mr. President, 36 senators of aye, 14 a voter no.
With 36 voting yes and 14 voting no, the motion to sign and die, the 69th legislative session has passed. We are adjourned.
All right, we are adjourned. That was the word on the floor yesterday from Senate President Matt Regeer, Republican out of Kalispell, Montana. Yeah, as we told you yesterday, it was expected that the legislature would adjourn by Wednesday afternoon. That has now happened. Do we start with the good news or do we start with the bad news? Senate President Matt Regeer, now with us on the show. Mr. President, thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning, Aaron, and good morning, Montana.
Yeah.
I think I like to be optimistic. I can spin a silver lining on everything, so.
Yeah.
Start with the good news.
Start with the good news, because it's always easy to focus on the frustrations and kind of the unfinished business that's out there as well.
Well, but even on the frustration and the unfinished business, it's, I think you get a step closer. Even if it seems like it's a step back, you're shining light on what's wrong with the procedure part of it, or what's wrong with the politics part of it. And to me, that's a step forward if you're going to even fix the system and the logistics of it. So that's my optimistic look at today. But as you can tell, we signed digesters, so I'm very, very optimistic about summer and just getting back to real life. So.
Well, obviously one of the big achievements earlier this week, the governor signed into law income tax relief. It was different from what the Republican senators were supporting, but it was an initiative. It was different from what the governor initially supported as well, but kind of a compromise package put together by Speaker of the House Brandon Lehr. Would you mark that up as one significant achievement from the legislative session?
Yeah, income tax too, and I did have people reaching out, even recently. We did some tax cut changes in the sessions before, and it changed the income tax. And so lowering that rate for everybody, I think, is a big win for the people of Montana, the working people of Montana that are out there. And this bill, House Bill 337, I believe, from Speaker Lehr, that and really targeted the middle class. The middle class, and you see over a percent decrease, which is about, 25%? 20% of an income tax decrease. So it's a big jump for that middle class, big drop for the middle class, and I think that's something we can all hang our hat on.
I was trying to explain to one listener earlier who was saying, well, didn't the rate only go from this percent to that percent? And I was trying to explain, well, the big boost to a lot of to a huge chunk of Montanans is, instead of being in the upper tax bracket now, I think a majority of the working class Montanans will now be put into the lower tax bracket. So both brackets will get reduced, but a lot of working Montanans will now be put into that lower bracket as well. So that's where people are really going to see the relief on the income tax front. More to follow with President Regeer right after this.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
One of the things we talked about last week with Senate President Matt Regeer was this massive spending. In fact, President Regeer, you probably saw that Associated Press headline. It was something to the effect of Republicans won big in the 2024 elections, but yet Democrats ended up basically controlling the legislature and ended up controlling the legislative session. Yeah, a handful of Republicans. This was kind of a repeat offense that we saw. A handful of Republicans voting with the Democrats. Massive spending bills pushed across the finish line. I like your line last week. I hope the governor's veto pen has a lot of ink in it. How much of this spending can be vetoed? How much can be trimmed back? How much of it will he maybe not be able to line item veto out of there?
Yeah, there are some things. I mean, there's a lot of things that come together. House Bill 2 is just one bill that it is the budget bill, and it's got billions of dollars in it. But there's a lot of cat and dog bills that go along with that that have appropriation in it that spend money. I mean, anywhere from setting $5 million for school facilities. I mean, that is just in one bill that's not in House Bill 2. So there is a lot of those cat and dog bills that could be vetoed too that would shrink the spending of state government. So that's one way the governor can do it. But also in appropriation bills like House Bill 2 that has billions of dollars, the governor can just take it line by line. And if there's a line in there for funding for something that he doesn't agree with, he can just amend that out. Just veto that line out so we're not spending that. But there are some lines that if it's one big chunk of money, you can't necessarily veto an increase if it's into the base of that line. So that, because then you'd lose all funding for, you know, school lunches or whatever. So he couldn't then just veto the increase to it. So there are some ways that money gets buried in there that can't get out. But overall, the governor does have a huge influence on the budget and the way legislation goes through and what makes it across the finish line here. And so a lot will be up to him in the next few days. Is I got a stack of bills on my desk. Everything has to be signed by the speaker and the president before it goes to the governor. So I got a stack of bills here. A lot of good stuff and some bad stuff that we're going to send down to him and see what he does with it.
Yeah, I think Dennis Bragg on his Montana State News Network update earlier this morning had a great soundbite from State Senator Daniel Zolnikoff, and you could just hear the frustration in Senator Zolnikoff's voice. Is basically, you know, here we are calling sine die, calling the adjournment with a lot of unfinished business, judicial reform being one of the big ones.
Yeah, judicial reform fell flat. The reality is we have a partisan judicial branch now, a lot of partisan judges that just hide behind the nonpartisan robe, if you will, and we didn't really affect that the way that we should have. There's checks and balances to the three branches of government, and we fell short on that. That is something I think we need to voters need to look at as we're voting for judges coming up, but then also next legislative session. Look at how we can bring more integrity and justice back to the judicial branch, for sure. But it was, on this House bill, too, you mentioned that AP article. It's funny, I just printed it out, and staff handed it to me this morning. That first line, I'll just read it real quick, because I think this kind of sums up 25 legislative session. This says, following Montana Republicans' dominance in the fall election, a group of GOP lawmakers kicked off the 2025 legislature with an unexpected move, ceding power to Democrats. And that was the frustrating part for a lot of conservatives going through this session. And you saw it with the votes. I mean, House Bill 2, we've got all Democrat votes in the Senate. And I believe I have to double check. I'm pretty sure all the Democrats in the House voted for it. So you got a unanimous Democrat supported House Bill 2 budget. I mean, that's just one example of kind of a theme of this 2025 legislative session.
Yeah, and I know, y'all, I try to talk with a lot of folks, and there it does just seem to be widespread frustration and disappointment with the legislative session overall because of that Republican infighting and a handful voting to undermine their leadership and pass all this massive spending hikes and everything. But there were some great moments of unity as well, particularly standing up for women's privacy and protecting women and girls' sports and locker rooms privacy and things like that. Property tax relief. We should get to that one here with a couple of minutes before the break. Property tax relief, good news and bad news. The good news is residential homeowners will see, seems like significant property tax relief, but I think it's going to be hard for somebody to explain why other folks will see a property tax increase.
Yeah, that is going to be frustrating. I'll start with the good stuff. We did change in Senate Bill 117, change in newly taxable. When there's new buildings come on, some of that needs to go to help lower everybody else's taxes. So we carved out a percentage of newly taxable. Local governments can't just add that to the budget and grow it. So there's reform like that that happened. Larry Brewster had a great bill that you have to run levies as dollars and not mills, so it can't float up with the mills. We did some fundamental things like that I think in the long run are really going to help. property tax, but the rate change, we had two bills, Senate Bill 542 and House Bill 231 that came here at the last minute. A lot of changes from the way it started out through the process, and it changes a lot of rates. And the first year, some people are going to see their rates go up while other people see it go down. And then the second year, it changes again with a $400 rebate the first year. I don't think we're going to feel the relief that the people wanted, and it's definitely going to shift the pain to a group that will rightfully be able to cry pretty loud. And that, to me, is not good for Montana, not the best way to move forward. That's why I voted against them.
All right. Senate President Regeer, hold that thought if you can. I'll come back to you for some final thoughts, kind of your message wrapping up the legislative session after this. And then we've got Democrat House Minority Whip Jonathan Carlin out of Missoula on the phone lines as well. He'll be up right after that.
It's morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're going to get to Democrat House Minority Whip Jonathan Carlin here in just a second. But since we kind of dove into the details on property taxes and more, definitely want to go back to Senate President Matt Regeer just to give kind of just a quick overview or just a wrap-up of the legislative session now that they have officially adjourned. President Regeer, what else do you want to tell folks across Montana?
Sure, I think to start out with, I mean, the good thing, we did pass a lot of stuff. I know it has been a cloud over ethics scandals to Democrat control, but there has been a lot of good stuff, that from housing to traditional values, pro-family, to public safety. We invested in the jails. We changed some tough on crime, tech freedom, some tech privacy, gun rights we had in there, the business with NEPA. So we really did move the needle on a lot of stuff that I don't think got the proper headlines that it should have. But I do think there's more to come back, and I think the voters, I love our Montana Constitution, Article 2, that states all political power is vested and derived from the people. That's the people of Montana, and we keep going conservative, and I think the voters need to demand that out of their legislators, and I believe brighter days are ahead here in the legislature.
All right, President Regeer, great to have you on the show. And, yeah, once the dust fully settles, we'll have to get you back on and Representative Carlin as well to do maybe the full hour, sneak in some callers and more once the dust settles and we have a clearer picture of, what's on the governor's desk, what the governor will sign, won't sign, et cetera. We will open up the phone lines here after the next break. So, if you want to weigh in your thoughts on the legislative session, we'll have open phones here in the second half. Jumping right into it with Representative Jonathan Carlin, the Democrat House Minority Whip out of Missoula. Representative Carlin, I've got to assume you've got to be pleased with how the legislature wrapped up, but maybe not. Maybe there's some unfinished business from your side of the aisle as well.
Hey, Aaron, thanks for having me back on. Overall, yes. I mean, I am very pleased. I think we saw good bipartisan work. Am I happy with everything? No, but I think that the people of Montana are going to be better off now than they were even before the session met.
The property tax relief, it was interesting. I think we kind of got a preview of this last week when I talked to a Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, where he anticipated that some sort of a hybrid plan would get across the finish line. And looks like that's exactly what happened yesterday, where you've got the property tax relief that will largely benefit residential homeowners, although, there was pushback from the ag and business community because they're worried about increases that they could see. And then combined with that, looks like there'll be basically a $400 property tax rebate as well. Hard to see how everybody could be happy by this, but at least from a residential property owner standpoint, that structural relief was what everybody was trying to figure out.
No, that's exactly right, and I appreciate the speaker and working with, all stakeholders, and I feel like this was a real kind of data-based collaborative effort. And I know that you're in Yellowstone County, and I've been, looking at different models, and, folks in Yellowstone County, for example, a median home should see in the ballpark of a 30% tax cut. I mean, that's something people are going to notice, and I think that the reason we got there is because Democrats worked with Republicans, and we said, let's put aside any of our kind of let's put aside some of the political rhetoric and let's maximize tax relief for homeowners.
Yeah, and what's interesting, too, is, you know, Republicans and Democrats alike, it sounds like the governor has already signaled that he intends to sign this property tax relief into law. So Republicans and Democrats can both share in the credit for the property tax relief or share in any potential fallout if there's, you know, depending on what folks in the ag community see in particular.
And I feel that when it comes to ag and other classes of property, I think none of us went into this saying that, you know, I think what we need is a fair tax system where nobody's paying an undue burden. For some of the industrial tax classes, think pipelines, for example, refineries, they are going to see a tax increase. But that tax increase is going to be, as the majority leader, Steve Fitzpatrick, even said, that's going to be less than the taxes they were paying a few years ago before home values skyrocketed. So nobody's going to be paying taxes that are disproportionate to what they're going to be able to afford or what they've even paid in recent years, which makes me think this is fair for everybody.
I know one of the frustrations I heard from one of our listeners earlier this morning that called me was, I think it was Stephen Ballantyne. He was saying, hey, how come we're still going to get taxed on our Social Security benefits? And, you know, for a lot of Montanans out there, I think they might look at this massive spending. I heard 18%, I think, was what the Montana Freedom Caucus, the conservative Republicans in the legislature, were saying that this budget that passed, you know, here in the final days would increase spending by 18%. And so I think you can see why, you know, guys like Stephen Ballantyne would say, wait a minute. Why are you increasing spending by 18% when we had a budget surplus and yet you're still taxing my Social Security benefits? Or maybe we didn't get as much property tax relief as we otherwise could have.
Yeah, you know, so this session we had both Republican and Democrat bills to roll back Social Security tax. I think I voted for both of them because I totally understand the pain a lot of seniors feel trying to keep up with rising prices. I think where the opposition came from, which I understand is just the cost of that. And I just pulled up the fiscal note, and, you know, it ends up being about well over $100 million a year to fully repeal Social Security tax. I think one thing we could do in the interim is look at, are there ways to change it so that, you know, your middle-class seniors are paying less? But I think the problem is that, you know, people see $150 million ongoing expenditure that it's tough for the state to swallow.
I did see the governor earlier this week, I believe it was here. Yeah, Governor Gianforte joined the Montana Department of Corrections Director Brian Gutkin, breaking ground on a $156 million infrastructure investment at the Montana State Prison. This is something I think even a lot of our listeners would say is long overdue, given the, you know, the crime problem we've had here in the state, given the lack of jail space, which, you know, is... Part of that problem is the fact that you've got state prisoners that should be in the prison, but they're still soaking up a jail space in county jails. So this should be a very good news. And I think even for, you know, some of the more conservative lawmakers who don't like to see more spending, I think most would agree that this is the type of stuff that we needed to see get across the finish line.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing that, and I did support this, because right now we're sending Montana taxpayer dollars to a private prison company in Arizona and Mississippi, where inmates from Montana are being sent all the way across the country. And I think nobody would say that's an efficient use of taxpayer money to be, you know, flying people halfway across the country. And so, you know, ideally, I hope we can have a smaller prison population by investing more in education, prevention, reducing recidivism, but we also have to recognize the situation we're in, and I'd rather those inmates be held here in Montana than somewhere where we don't have direct oversight.
You know, I mentioned that Associated Press article with President Regeer. Obviously, you know, he was frustrated by, you know, a handful of Republicans voting with Democrats. But that AP article basically said, hey, Republicans won big in the 2024 elections, yet Democrats basically were able to control a good chunk of the legislature this session. Were there some things that Democrats got across the finish line that maybe you were skeptical of before the session kicked off?
So the bills that Democrats got across the finish line, I would say, were generally shared priorities in that, like, I'll give an example. You know, I had a bill that was an investment in child care for child care workers. That was bipartisan. I think it was bipartisan because, I mean, I spoke to a rep in Lewistown who was telling me that, that they struggle with child care affordability over there. So, I mean, I think a lot of these bills that got across the finish line got across because they were issues that transcended rural and urban. I mean, like, I had a bill passed that was related to funding for special education for 3 and 4 year olds. I mean, that's not a Democrat or Republican issue. You know, we passed some reforms when it came to prior authorization for healthcare services, making sure Montanans aren't facing barriers to care. Again, that's something that faces, you know, both Democrats and Republicans with diabetes need insulin. And so I think we, I mean, to me, the bills we got across the finish line as Democrats were bills that, that we went out of our way to get consensus on. And I think that's how governing should work.
How worried are you that, okay, here the legislature delivers residential property tax relief? How worried are you that, you know, here you send this property tax relief back to folks in Missoula, and then the city and the county is just going to take it all anyway, and then the people don't even really get to see the benefits of property tax relief?
Well, so I mean, the cities and the counties, their budget growth is capped. It's capped at half the rate of inflation. There's, you know, the voters in Missoula right now, you know, have the option of voting in mill levy elections as they do across the state. So the way I see it is that, you know, what I feel very comfortable doing is telling constituents from the state level, we lowered your property tax rate, and that's going to be a meaningful cut. We can't control what every other taxing jurisdiction does, but I feel really comfortable saying we did what we could at the state level to lower your property taxes.
I like that bill that President Regeer mentioned. I think it was a Senator Zolnikoff bill that basically also requires these cities, when they do see growth, to use that growth to fund their budgets instead of just sap the existing taxpayers with it, because they do benefit from that growth. About a minute to go here with Democrat House Minority Whip Jonathan Carlin. What else do you want to tell folks across Montana wrapping up this session?
I actually voted for that bill you mentioned, Aaron. You know, I think one thing I just want to thank Montanans for is all their outreach. I mean, my email inbox is routinely just full of people from the public commenting, saying, you know, I agree, I disagree, do this, you know, we want to see more of that. And I think that your listeners reaching out, even just when I hear from them on the phone calling in, it makes a big difference. I think it keeps the pressure on legislators to be responsive and do the right thing. I think that's how democracy is supposed to work. And I'm just really grateful for how active people in Montana are in holding their leaders accountable.
All right, Representative Carlin, great to have you on the show as always. And yeah, well, maybe we'll look at doing, once the dust all settles here in a week or two, getting both you and President Regeer on for a full hour kind of legislative wrap once the dust fully settles. But we appreciate you joining us here the day after adjournment. Coming up after the break, we've got the phone lines open for you. What do you want to talk about? What's your reaction? The good news, the bad news, 294-0970.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
Charges have been dropped against South Dakota ranchers Charles and Heather Maud. Ben Patterson, Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Federal District Court in the Western Division of South Dakota, signed a motion to dismiss the indictment. The Mods are a South Dakota ranching family who were indicted separately nearly a year ago on charges of theft of federal property stemming from a fence line dispute on a fence built before either were born. South Dakota representatives visited the allotments in question last week with Tom and Randy Hamilton and Marie and Jackie Maud, the couple's parents, and saw the fence line in question. South Dakota Speaker Pro Tem Carla Lambs was one of the representatives in attendance.
It's a small parcel of ground that we're dealing with here, and it's just, how did we get to this point with a criminal indictment over something that literally this land is maybe worth like $15,000, and why couldn't this have been settled over a cup of coffee and an agreement to work together going forward?
Many groups have pled with the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins and others in D.C. to dismiss the charges. The U.S. attorney who signed the original summons, Allison J. Ramsdell, a Biden appointee, is expected to soon be replaced by Ren Parsons, who served under the first Trump administration. Representative Lims said dismissing the charges is the right thing to do.
This is three words. It's wrong, wrong, wrong. So let's get it right.
I'm Lane Nordlund.
Hi, everybody.
Big topics. Big ideas. Big sky. Montana talks.
All right, random start here to this second half of the hour here. Random start before we get back to your phone calls. And I just got a great message out of Miles City talking about property taxes, etc. Random start for you here. Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich shared this. You guys remember the big fire in Los Angeles, the Palisades fire? How many homes were lost there? The billions, maybe more in damages when you calculate it all up. Remember when, and then of course, Donald Trump, the president of the United States, shows up in Los Angeles and he calls out the mayor of LA right there, cameras rolling in front of everybody. And he calls her out for her environmental extremist policies that are making it harder for people to rebuild. Do you guys remember that back and forth that I was talking about here? Well, Newt Gingrich shared this, I think, a couple of days ago on X, and I printed it out. I haven't mentioned it on the air yet, but it's just like people need to hear this. 4 months ago, the Palisades fire destroyed more than 6,800 homes in Los Angeles. 3 months later, only 4 permits had been issued to rebuild the community. Clearly, California just isn't working. Man, that is just so symbolic of government bureaucracy that we've seen here across the country, the government bureaucracy that has prevented us from, you know, getting mining up and running here in America, the government bureaucracy that shut down our timber industry and so much more. And it sounds like President Trump needs to do another trip to Los Angeles to say, hey, Madam Mayor, you told us that these environmental policies and this bureaucratic red tape wasn't going to stop people from rebuilding. I think even Bill Maher on HBO, you know, very far left guy, was complaining about the fact that he can't even get his roof done because of the absurd bureaucracy in Los Angeles, California. Anyway, crazy stuff. All right, property taxes. Miles City, Montana. Eric Moore is a former state senator in the Montana legislature, and we were talking about property tax relief. And this is the thing I struggle with. I think a lot of people are going to struggle with this one. Okay, so the state has been sitting on a massive budget surplus. So they've taken too much of our money in. It's our money. And yet they're still taxing Social Security benefits. So they're going to increase spending by 18%. Hopefully the governor vetoes all of this. I did see the Montana Freedom Caucus is encouraging their folks to, you know, encourage the governor to veto this massive overspending. But let's go back to the property tax relief. Okay, so residential property taxpayers are going to get a break, but others, some businesses, some of the larger businesses, and folks in agriculture, won't see that property tax relief and might see their taxes go up. I just struggle to see how anybody could explain why anybody should be paying a dime more in taxes. The government has been collecting too much of our money, all of us. So you shouldn't have to make somebody pay more so that somebody else can pay less. They have a budget surplus. Everybody should be getting the relief, and certainly not an increase, if you ask me. But that's why we need to fundamentally reform this whole property tax system. That's what we need, a citizens initiative that will stop taxing people based off of the value of their home and instead based off of what they paid for the home. But Eric Moore out of Miles City, he sent me this. He says, we are looking at a double-digit increase in ag property tax in Custer County. There is no property tax cut, just a shift to other classes of property. Property taxes are like whack-a-mole. If you push it down in one place, it pops up in another. If the legislature won't buy down property tax with income tax, we should consider a discussion about some kind of consumption tax. Make the tourists pick up some of the burden. And that's from Eric Moore in Miles City, former state senator. Eric, thanks for that message. What say you? Give us a call, 294-0970. We got Mike in Bozeman on the phone lines. Yeah, Mike, I think, heard an earlier conversation on 1450 KMMS, an interview with Dallas Knight, Operation Juliet. Great program that's getting ready to put on some retreats for women warriors here in Montana. Mike, what did you want to share? Thanks for the call.
Had some thoughts. I'm the father of three daughters. I'm also a Vietnam veteran. And it really bothers me when I think of a what-if scenario. If any one of my daughters was to be in a active military in a combat role and they were to be sexually traumatized. So as I step back from this situation and I try to analyze from should women be allowed in combat roles? Is it okay or is it preferred that they remain in support roles? And this is a subject that I am still lacking in information. In other words, the women that have been in active combat roles since I was in the military, and knowing that we men were not drafted, like was the case in my era, and it's voluntary, is Hegseth looking at this from a Department of Defense perspective seriously? In other words, the question of should women be in direct combat roles, and that includes...
Well, I know the issues come up. Yeah.
Combat aircraft.
Yeah, I know the issues come up, and what the only real change that Secretary of Defense Hegseth has made, if I recall correctly here, is he's saying, look, you know, the public so far has supported, you know, women in combat roles, and of course, what is a combat role in the war on terror, you know, these days anymore? But that aside, what he has said is hey, the standards are going to be the same. That the physical physical fitness standards are going to be the same regardless of if you're a man or a woman. So that was the main, because before what the Biden administration was doing, et cetera, is they were saying, well, yeah, we're going to have men and women in combat roles, but then they had different standards for women compared to the men. So that's one change. But yeah, your reaction is interesting to hear, because for those who've never heard Dallas Knight speak before, incredible a woman warrior, female veteran here in Montana. She was a machine gunner in Iraq, and she's got this Operation Juliet. And what she tells us is that, you know, here she is. She's doing, you know, she's doing this podcast focused on women veterans, the Not So Average Jane podcast, and now she's holding these retreats to get all these women veterans together in the process. Any, you know, post traumatic stress, and what she told us is that a big number of the women that she talks with, the women veterans, have suffered some form of military sexual trauma, MST, sexual trauma, and which piles onto any, you know, post-traumatic stress you might have from, you know, combat as well. And so the thing that it tells me is that's why it's so important to me, that's the challenge and the call to action to people in this country is, okay, all you people who support, you know, women in combat roles, all you people who said, oh, yeah, women should be in these jobs, women should be in that job, oh, yeah, there's, you know, women should be in infantry units. Okay, well, put your money where your mouth is now. Because whether you agreed with that move or disagreed with that move, you need to support these women all the way through. And and now that they have post-traumatic stress, and look, there's biological differences between men and women. Women veterans have different needs than men veterans. And what Dallas is doing is she's taking care of those women warriors. So all you people that want a virtue signal about women's rights and women should be in these roles and women should be in that role, okay, well, you know what? Put your money where your mouth is and support these programs that are taking care of these women warriors, right? I mean, that's kind of my take. Mike, your thoughts?
Well, the expression, put your money where your mouth is, I'm putting my daughters and their honor where my mouth is.
Yeah,
and
I hear
that's different than the money. And to me, I cannot see my way around making it so that Women should not be in combat roles, even voluntarily. And I bet that there's a whole lot of knowledge that could be gained by talking with the Israelis. Because I know
there would have been a great question to throw to Dallas Knight, is to get her reaction to that. And then on top of that, Mike. Okay, like I remember, you know, during the Biden years, I remember we had a mom in Red Lodge, and her daughters were serving in the military. And they were told that they had to be okay with men going into their shower facilities because of the radical transgender agenda. So talk about an extra slap in the face on that front. Thanks for the call, Mike.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, I got a couple of messages here on the Montana Talks app. And by the way, your messages, your phone calls, that will drive the conversation here on Montana Talks. I may have 15 different things I was going to talk about, but when you call in and tell us what you want to talk about, hey, that just like you heard from Mike and Bozeman, that can set the direction of the show. If you call right now, I should be able to get you on before we wrap up the hour. If you want to, you know, if you have any reactions to the legislative session, anything like that, call 406-294-0970 right now, and I should be able to get you on before we run out of time. But here's a couple of messages that came in. John in, I think he's in Belgrade or Bozeman, sent us this message after our legislative update. He says, to your Democrat representative that was just on, no males in female sports and locker rooms should be across the board nonpartisan. But yet not one Democrat voted in favor of it. So here we are. And then John added this, I admire you letting him on and speak, Aaron, but the Montana Democrat Party is horrible. That's from John in the Bozeman area. Let's see. Yeah, 406-294-0970 is the number for you if you want to weigh in on the legislative session adjournment or anything else on that front. You know, Mike in Bozeman was talking about Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. I saw the Trump War Room shared some highlights. President Trump had yet another open to the press, open to the public cabinet meeting yesterday, recapping the first 100 days. Here's part of what Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth had to say.
Go ahead, Pete. Well, Mr. President, I think we're controversial because we're over the target. And like so many things, Mr. President, you inherited a demoralized military that couldn't recruit, that was perceived as weak after what happened in Afghanistan and elsewhere because of Joe Biden. And what we have seen since your election and the inauguration has been nothing short of a recruiting renaissance. Decades, it hasn't been decades since we've seen this kind of recruiting in the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Air Force. The men and women of America want to join the United States military led by President Donald Trump.
Yeah, and we've seen a massive boost in the numbers. I think I told you yesterday, the Army alone has already met, was it 85% of their goal? And that's before what they call the summer surge. And they've already reached like 65 or 85% of their recruitment goal. And we saw the numbers really start to spike after President Trump was elected, and then after Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth was announced as Secretary of Defense. Back into the phone lines we go. We've got Sally in Roberts. Sally, what's your thoughts this morning?
Well, I'm just thinking that it would be a good idea if we would trade our state income tax for a sales tax. I think it would be a more fair way to tax people rather than taxing what they earn, tax what they spend.
Our sales tax has always been really unpopular in Montana, almost any time it's been brought up. But with the way property taxes have been going, if people aren't fully satisfied, I wonder if that conversation would change moving forward. I still fundamentally believe we don't have an income problem or a revenue problem in Helena or Washington for that matter, we've got a spending problem. So that's why the governor needs to break out that veto pen.
Right. I agree. And if we can't eliminate one of our present taxes, then we shouldn't do a sales tax. But I think it needs to be a total trade-off.
All right, Sally, great to hear from you. Hey, we were talking about our military and our veterans. Let me tell you about a great veteran-owned business, Great Marine out of Big Fork, Montana. I met him at President Trump's inauguration, and he said, Aaron, I'm going to send you some of my product. I built this product. I want you to try it out. You're a fellow veteran, you know, and you exercise, and you know the aches and pains from working hard and playing hard. It's called Power Plus Pain Aid, where you get the energy. It's like an energy drink, but also with those pain-relieving vitamins that are included in it. In fact, it was funny. I had a doctor in the studio with me, and he was looking at the ingredients on this Power Plus Pain Aid. He's like, oh, yeah, that's all good. All good. No red flags on that one, but I will flag this for you. If you want more energy and less pain, check out Power Plus Pain Aid. Go to drinkpowerplus.com. And if you use the code FLINT15, FLINT15 at checkout, you can get 15% off. Tim in Kalispell, what's on your mind this morning?
Hey, it's Jim in Kalispell.
Oh, Jim, yeah, good to hear from you.
Talk about the cabinet meeting again yesterday. God, it's like a dear leader meeting. And, you know, if we want to talk about Biden's mental acuity, I think we need to put Trump in the same spot.
How come?
Both of those individuals are past their prime, so to speak. And I'll use an example. The Trump thought that the Photoshop letters on the guy's knuckles were real.
No, he didn't. He was saying that the symbols on the tattoos spell out MS-13. The guy who's going to head up the DEA said that very thing yesterday.
I saw the interview. He said the letters on there that were photoshopped on there, he thought those letters were real.
The guy had MS-13 tattooed on the tops of his fingers. I mean, the head of the guy who's going to head up the DEA, who has got a career in drug enforcement, said, yeah, those tattoos spell out MS-13. That's what I don't get. Like guys like you on the left and the fake news media, ABC News, oh, those tattoos didn't spell out MS-13. Oh, yeah, sure they didn't. And you guys want Kilmore back here.
Attention.